Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I'll be your host today. This is another in our ongoing series, The News in Reviews. We have a very busy program lined up for this afternoon, and we're going to be touching on several cases. Joining me to help unravel the details is my wife, Jan. Jan, welcome.
Thank you. Hello, everyone.
She did want to call in sick, but I wouldn't let her. All right, from upstate New York, my good friend, the crime doctor himself, Denny Griffin. Denny, good to talk to you.
Good afternoon, Simon. Glad to be with you again.
Denny, it sounds like your latest book is almost ready for prime time.
Yes, it's just entered the production stage last week, so hopefully it'll be right on schedule for October and November.
Alrighty, I'm looking forward to the finished product.
Thank you.
From Orlando, Florida, we have journalist Dave Neckel. Dave, how's your week been?
Oh, it's been pretty good. Hello, everyone. It's been a busy week, I guess.
And from the state of Maine, we have investigator Peter Hyatt. Peter, how's your week been?
Oh, I've been on vacation, so it's been a wonderful week. Hello,
right.
Everyone.
Right. Are you fully refreshed and ready to go carve some new assholes, as we would say?
Denny, you heard that?
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what. Sometimes they present it and they hand us the scalpel, and they hand us everything that we need. And Cindy Anthony is one of those people that just seems to be very generous when it comes to statement analysis and deception.
Okay. We will obviously be touching on that subject this afternoon. Of course, no program would be complete without our favorite bail bondsman, William Cobra Storbs. Bill, how good to talk to you again.
Hey, Simon, it's my pleasure. And the panel, it's always a pleasure to hear everyone, and good to be over here talking.
TJ, I'm not sure what you're doing, but... TJ. Bill, I'm not sure what you're doing, but your phone is breaking up.
How about now? Does it sound a little better?
Yeah, it certainly does. And I do want to... ask a very quick question before we move on. Jan is thinking about putting down a new laminate floor in the house. We've heard that you're the absolute expert.
Well, somebody's lying. They ought to ask Peter. Peter, they lying on me. They lying on me.
I'll never tell.
Somebody lied on me. I don't know nothing about no laminate flooring.
Whoops. And I do believe that we might have the infamous TJ Hart with us. TJ, is that you on the line?
Or is that Danny?
Nope. Oh, okay. TJ should be joining us at some point in the broadcast as soon as he gets his cell phone charged up. As always, our phone lines are open. Our switchboard number is 646-378-1120, and you're also welcome to ask your questions in our chat room. Okay, on with the program. Earlier this week, Jan received an email about a missing person. But this is actually not much of an unusual event anymore in the Barrett household. Alas, our resources are very limited, and we really can't give every case the coverage that it deserves. This story, though, was so unusual, we just had to investigate. Eric Primsberger is yet another person who literally disappeared into thin air. Our plan originally was to have Eric's mother, Kay Wilson, and Val Howell, the owner of the HinkyMeter.com website on the program today. However, we talked to Kay yesterday, and the poor lady is in the midst of an absolute family medical crisis. And I do hope that things are working out okay, Kay. And I'm also hoping she'll be able to join us next week. Jan, you're much more in tune with this story than I am. Can you tell us a little bit about Eric's disappearance?
Well, Eric went missing, they say, sometime between April 20th and the 24th of this year, and he hasn't been seen since then. But apparently him and his wife had a little disagreement, and he left, and nobody's seen him since then. But the twist in this story is that his wife and his three children are missing also. Nobody knows where they're at or anything either. And it's kind of puzzling because, want to know where they are.
Okay, let's back up just a little bit. This is happening in Reno, Nevada, I know.
Well, this is where he was living, yes. And right after he disappeared, his wife packed everything up and moved where they were planning to move in Eugene, Oregon. Now they had plans because he had just talked to his mother on his wedding anniversary and was telling his mother, Kay, how excited he was about the move. And I believe she talked to the oldest granddaughter, and she even was excited about making the move. But he just disappeared, and they don't have any idea where he's at.
Now, the plan, moving to Oregon, he was going to be involved in a new company or something?
Yeah, him and his wife's brother. I don't know what kind of business it was, but they had plans to start their own business together, and that's why they were going to be moving to Oregon. But apparently now his wife is also missing with her brother, too, along with the kids.
Okay, and there are two children?
Two, right. Ivy and Damien, age 6 and 2.
Simon, is this the case where they might have been seen going to Mexico, and this is the one where they had the eggs left out on the counter? I recall hearing something about that, and they went to the house, and there was some eggs left out on the counter, but the move hadn't taken place, and possibly they went to Mexico or something of this nature. Is that the same case?
I don't think so, Cobra. I know you said
right?
Simon, but I don't believe that's the same one.
Yeah, this case happened approximately 3 months ago. Or that's when it started. Anyway, essentially what we have here is the guy is completely missing. His wife, two kids, and his wife's brother have also vanished into thin air. Now, Jan, you have an article up about this.
Yes, I do.
And you do have some pictures, I believe?
Yeah, I've got pictures of him with his family on the article of Eric, I can't ever pronounce the name, Kreemsberger, Nevada man missing for 107 days. Have you seen him? There are pictures on there, and there's also a link on there, on that article, to his Facebook where you can go and see more pictures about it. And also Val Hall has got... I'm sorry if I mispronounced that. On her website, thehinkymeter.com, she's got some really good pictures on there that you can see really clear. And maybe, you can look, anybody can look and see if they've seen them.
I know that we have listeners and readers from all over the country, and I would like everyone to just take a couple of minutes and take a peek at Jen's article and those photographs. And if you recognize anyone in those photographs, please contact law enforcement.
I do have that information about it, but Eric's missing is considered under suspicious circumstances. and right now it's formally listed as a missing and endangered adult. And anybody with any information can also, they can contact Detective Myers, at the Reno Police Department. You can go to him directly, and his phone number is 775-657-4801. I'm sorry. And the case number is 10-13351. And also, they want, if anybody wants to remain anonymous, they can call Secret Witness in Reno at 775-322-4900. Or they can go on the internet at secretwitness.com, and it will be complete. If you go through Secret Witness, it'll be completely anonymous. If you'd prefer to be it that way,
and we of course are more than happy to relay any messages that people have.
Oh, definitely. If you have any information, you can email me or Simon, and we'll be glad to get it on to make sure his mother and Detective Myers gets the message.
Okay, Cobra, you're the expert in finding people. Where would you start? The bank accounts apparently have not been touched. There are no cell phone records. There's nothing.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, anytime I hear a case out of that part of the world, the first thing that enters my mind, especially in mysterious situations like this, there is a drug highway that runs right up that path, and I don't know whether it had any relations to any of that, but if there's no traffic on there, any type of cards or cash or any transfers like that, nothing on any cell phones, I find that very odd to begin with, that nobody has a cell phone in this day and age, but no logins, no nothing, you know, who did he last speak with, his friends, family, whoever. I mean, they said there was a little fight going on there or something like that, but then they were moving out. And the question would be in my mind is narrowed down between April 21st and April 24th, and why did he leave ahead of his wife and family if they were moving such a great distance
to another state? Well, they don't think he left to go to Reno. I mean, they don't know for sure, but it wasn't meant to be that way. They were supposed to be moving as a family together to Eugene or Oregon.
Then my question would be is why did the wife go ahead after he's missing and go ahead and bust a move anyway and then come up missing herself and this brother-in-law cat? You know,
in question, but, you know, we don't know for sure. I know that I'm pretty sure that his wife has contacted her mother once or twice, and she has contacted the detective, but I don't know any details of it.
Since she's been missing, you mean? Since she's been gone?
Yeah, apparently
But
really?
no one knows their location.
Oh, well, then I'm going to move it from a drug situation, and the brother-in-law's missing, and she's still reaching out and making contact. You know, I always take the love affairs, the drug affairs, and all those things, and first you have to wipe all those out first. And to me, if she's all of a sudden popping up, but they just don't know where she's popping up at since they've been gone, man, that opens up a whole another can of worms, my friend.
Oh, it does. Denny, I know that you have no knowledge of this case whatsoever, but in the 10 minutes we've been talking about it, where would you go? Where would you start?
Yeah, I got a question. If you or Jane know the answer, maybe you don't. The brother, or in this case, the missing guy's brother-in-law and his wife, along with the two kids, are also missing. But are they actually reported as missing persons? I mean, has someone reported them as missing and they're being sought by law enforcement? Or just whereabouts unknown?
No, that's what I said. They are being listed as, with the detective, they are being he is being listed as a missing and endangered adult.
Uh-huh. I would love to know the conversation that the wife had when she popped her head up and why she's staying mysterious and hiding out or whatever she's doing there. And then also I'd like to know if the brother-in-law is also popping up, because then I put it into a relationship problem, and then the husband probably met his demise somewhere along the lines. It just doesn't make any sense for missing people to start calling in but not to verify or locate their, you know, give their whereabouts and continue to be mysterious. So to me, Something there smells very, very fishy.
What I meant, Jan, was I know that he's been reported missing, but has someone reported the brother-in-law and the wife also is missing?
I'm sorry,
people?
I was typing at the same time. As far as I know, I don't know that. I don't know
okay.
if they have been.
I was wondering, I agree with Cole, but if you got three adults involved as missing persons, if they're all reported missing, you think one of them would have had some kind of record. You know, like Cobra says, in this day and age, for no cell phone activity, especially if you're looking at three different people checking them. Now, maybe they aren't checking the wife and the brother-in-law. I don't know. But that does seem a little odd to me. And you say that there was no activity financially, no cell phone, at least on the young man from...
On any of them.
On any of them. So they have checked, apparently, the wife's activities and the brother-in-law's also, and they found no financial or cell phone activity at all?
That's correct. And
wow.
I'm gonna break in just for a second. We might have new information. We have a caller coming in from the 309 area code.
Yes, she knows the case pretty good.
What's your name, and what can you tell us about this case?
Hi, this is Catfish, and
hi, Catfish.
I've been in contact with Kay for a while. When I first ran across this case over at the Hinky Meter, there was so much information. I went through all of the comments and all of the articles and made a timeline, and I have pictures on my blog too. But what happened was it's always been a stormy relationship, but the last time that his mother talked to him was the last time that anyone heard from him, was the last date that anyone heard from him. He is reported and listed missing endangered. The wife and kids and brother are not actually, there's not actually a missing persons report filed on them up in Oregon, but they have done welfare checks for them and found they were gone. And she had also went to Vancouver, Washington, and stayed with Eric's stepsisters for a couple weeks. And 2 days before she left is when her brother went missing in Eugene, Oregon. She was supposed to be going to her mother's in New Mexico. She has had some contact with her mother to let her know that the kids are okay, but I don't think that her mother knows where they're at.
Right.
The police definitely don't know where she's at, and she has contacted them once or twice, and
right.
Evidently the information has been the same information that she gave them when this happened.
Catfish.
That they got in an argument, and he took and threw his cell phone at her, and the keys to his Ruckus scooter, which was his only transportation, and walked away, said, "You'll never see me again." That's
Catfish.
What she's saying, but she refused to make a missing persons report, too.
Uh-huh.
Catfish?
Yeah.
Yeah, a couple of questions. Who actually reported him missing, his mom?
It took her 3 weeks before they would accept a missing persons report from her. It was supposed to come from his wife, but she wouldn't do it. So it took Kay 3 weeks to get it done. And then just transferred at the beginning of July over to the Robbery Homicide Division in Reno.
I'm not familiar there. What does the endangered mean instead of just a missing adult? What does that imply? A medical condition or what?
Well, actually, his father did commit suicide last October, and that may be part of it why they listed him that way, but also because of the suspicious circumstances.
Okay.
That he's missing. There's also been Christy is his wife, and her mother reported to the police that she did have a gun, and she does have drug history. He's married to her, so I imagine he has some drug history, but I don't think this is like a drug deal type situation. They were getting ready to move to Eugene, Oregon to start a business with her brother Tim Morgan selling building Turks. They're like a round, a dome type home thing.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And the brother-in-law is missing now, Catfish? The brother-in-law is
missing? Yeah, he went missing 2 days before Eric's wife and kids went missing up in Vancouver. See, they went and stayed with him. He moved him up to Eugene shortly after Eric went missing, before Kay could even get a missing persons report filed.
Has there been any suspicion in the family that these two were once an item or appeared to have some inappropriate behavior between them?
No, not that I've heard of. Not that I've heard of. As a matter of fact, he spoke to his mother on July 1st. His mother reports that he said he was sick of her drama and bullshit. So I don't know. There's been a lot of arguing back and forth between the mothers of Eric and Christy. And I know that Kay's trying to be very careful now what she's saying so that it doesn't interrupt with the investigation.
She doesn't want to jeopardize anything that they have
right
now.
She doesn't want to.
That's understandable.
Brother-in-law,
yeah.
The brother-in-law married. Is he married as well? The missing brother-in-law, is he married?
I don't believe he is.
I don't think so either.
Yeah.
How
and
is he so entwangled?
Is both of their mothers live in New Mexico, so that's a very good area too to look. They used, they're from there originally, but. I have pictures of all of them on my website too.
Catfish, how is he so entwined? He's so entwined with his brother's wife and tired of her bullshit type of thing. That leads me to believe that he's spent a great deal of time with her.
It's his sister, Tim Morgan, and Christy is Morgan. It's his little sister.
And did you hear my comment coming into the show? This is not the case that we saw momentarily. National TV, where the eggs were left out on the counter and all that crap?
No,
oh, okay.
No. She packed up everything into a pod and moved it up to Eugene. And then she moved just her and the kids. They left the pod in Eugene, but they went to Washington to Eric's sisters, stepsisters, and said everyone knew that they were coming there and to stay this summer, which turned out was not true. No one knew they were going there.
Right.
But when she left there on June 16th, she said that she was going to her mother in New Mexico, and she never showed up there. And I believe then that her mother had a welfare check done, and because I know that law enforcement went to the sister's house in Washington and said that they had already been to the brother's on the 14th, and he was missing too.
Did Catfish, did something happen? You said that in July that this went to the homicide robbery squad. Was there any particular incident that caused that, or just the timing, or what?
I think it was resources, that they could use more resources there. Because it's suspicious, no one has been named a person of interest or a suspect or anything like that. But they can't get information, Christy is the last person that saw him. And
the one thing I will say is that law enforcement, for once, are actually reaching out to the press. Please, anyone that has information, do weigh in on this story. It's very important.
Yeah, it does. He was the main caregiver for those two little kids. So at the time that they went missing, so it's very highly unusual that he would not be at least in touch with his kids, or his mother, because he was close to her. He spoke to her weekly. So, but I just wanted to chime in because I did know a lot of the information about it. So. I put a thread on Help Find the Missing website, too. So.
I think the biggest thing they're going to do is find the mommy, because to me, just breaking the case down, I don't know how the rest of the panel feels about it, but it seems like brother came to her aid, like two bank robbers, and then they split up after, some falling out, and he hit the road and ran. He probably helped her in something, and it does smell like very bad foul play, especially for her to be ducking and jiving all over the United States. So probably the biggest thing.
Well, we know they were together.
After
they went missing, because they called their mother on July 1st.
Absolutely. I think them two are into something, and you got to find her in order to start putting this puzzle back together. He probably hit it because he's scared now she's going to give him up. And I don't know how you feel about that, Peter, but it sounds to me like they, brother came to his sister's aid, and now they've fallen out, and he said, hell it is, got gone.
Yeah,
no, I think
he was there the day, too, that Eric went missing. So he had come to help load the pod because Eric had a hurt ankle, which makes it all the more suspicious for him to walk off without his scooter. He was involved in a ruckus website, you know. He was very, very involved with this scooter thing and had it really fixed up. And you know, it was beloved, you know. He wouldn't just throw the keys at her and not take it.
That's
but
a lie.
That was her excuse for her still having the scooter.
Yeah, well, that'd be a blatant lie right off the rip-row right there. Mm-hmm. I'd say find her and you'll solve this case.
I'm inclined to agree. Catfish, thank you so much for calling in with your information.
We really appreciate it.
Yeah, I got to move on here.
You betcha. That's really about all I could say anyway. So,
well, thank you so much.
Yeah, and please do keep in touch. Okay, one more call. Someone coming in from the 407 area code. What's your name and...
Simon, it's
me. I was cut off.
Oh, you were cut off? No,
yeah, I was cut off. I'm working on two phones right now.
Yeah, good.
Okay,
good.
I'll hang up the one. You there?
Indeed.
Textual issues on this channel, Dave, so, you know, being cut
off. You there?
No,
yep, we are. Peter, you've been very quiet. What do you make of the story that we've just been talking about?
Well, I agree with Cobra. I think that what Cobra was doing there was swimming circles around and around and ruling out this and ruling out that, and even as it progressed, he got closer and closer to probably what took place. I know that when someone disappears like that, I'd like to look at the mental health history, and I know that they have shared this information with someone, someplace, and that's just a very common trait. And I also agree with Cobra that in this day and age, no cell phone records anywhere is awfully strange. So I think you're on the right track.
Hey, you won't find any cell phone records from me. I don't own one. I'm the only person in the entire U.S. that doesn't.
I don't know.
But I can find you at your house. That's the big difference. You're at home, baby. Or at the store getting a pack of cigarettes.
Exactly.
Am I right,
Dad?
I either got him in the kitchen or I got him at the store buying cigarettes. I mean, he don't
Okay. Again, I just want to reiterate, law enforcement really, really is looking for our help on this. So
find, you'll solve the case. Find mommy and you'll solve this case.
Absolutely.
Well, they are encouraging to spread the pictures around to anyone that wants to see them, or, you know, if you've got a blog, put them on there, or anybody that can spread it around, the more the better.
My suggestion to law enforcement this is multiple states, multiple jurisdictions, and possibly an out of country, and I say it's time to bring the feds on and go ahead with your wiretaps and everything else that you do. But she's popping up every now and then, so I would say the FBI would be the ones to bring in now.
Yeah, well, I know for sure that the Oregon police out of Eugene are working with Detective Myers also. So, but like you said, it's across state now.
Yeah,
you know,
not taking anything away from Detective Morgan and those guys, absolutely, but they flipped it to homicide, like Denny was asking why. They flipped over there for deeper pockets and more resources. I say go to the federal level and you'll have all the resources you need. And plus, you can stop all the interjurisdictional complaints and various things and, you know, let those guys continue to help and everything, not try to take away from them, but bring in the resources of the feds, find that lady, and bring her to bear on what's going on here.
Okay. It is definitely time to move on to our next case. And this is a case where law enforcement don't seem to be nearly as interested. Zachary Pittman. I do believe that we have Mother Christy Ragus on the phone with us. Christy, are you with us?
Yes. Hi, guys. How y'all doing? Hi, Christy.
I think it'd be fair to say that you just had about enough of being ignored by the St. Tammany Parish Sheriff's Office. This week you fired the lead detective and his boss. What can you tell us about that?
It was to their answering machines. I called the detective because I had tried all week call him again with information. Of course, trying to get another search up, you know, in local and, you know, local area where I can't get help on getting, you know, jurisdiction problems and stuff going on in Pearl River. And never Friday, I just got fed up. So I called his answer machine, and I called and the answer machine came on, and I said, well, this is Christy Ragus, and this is your answer machine. I guess I know it better than I know you. I just want to let you know. I was very polite, and I said, well, since you can't call me back or, you know, try to contact me anymore, don't worry about calling me back, and I won't bother calling you back. Thank you for everything that you've done for me, but that's it. I hung up with him, and I called his sergeant's phone, and, of course, I got an answer machine again. And I said, I left a message with Detective Corey Crow, and I'm going to tell you the same thing. I appreciate everything that you've done for me, but since y'all can't call me back, don't worry about it no more, and I won't bother you anymore. And I sat on that for about an hour. I was fuming. I was just mad. So I called the sheriff's office, the elected sheriff, Jack Strain's office, and his secretary answered, and I told her who I was. Before I could finish saying what it was about, he transferred immediately to an office, and a captain, I believe his name is Culpepper, maybe I'm saying it wrong, he said, boy, your ears must have been ringing. We were just talking about you. And I said, I bet you were. You must have listened to the messages I left. He goes, yes, ma'am. He said, yes, ma'am, we did. We want to come meet you. I said, well, it's kind of hard because I'm in Mobile at this moment, but I will meet you anywhere you want to, you know, and we agreed upon tomorrow. But he told me, I said, well, you know, he was telling me that Corey was on vacation. I said, well, that's nice to know. He goes, well, he's no longer on the case anymore. I said, really? Nobody bothered to tell me. And I said, what about George Cox, his sergeant? He's no longer on the case either. I said, okay. I said, well, you know what? I said, I don't understand this. I've been pretty patient, and I've been very nice and polite to everybody, but I'm done. I said, it took 3 months for y'all to get this in the paper about my son, who's been missing, not to mention 6 months for you to look for him. And he says, well, you know, he started talking about, well, this and that, we've done everything. I said, okay. And he says, I really want to meet you. And I said, okay. So we set up a time, and then he says, well, I really need to talk to Corey Crow first. I said, okay, he's probably going to tell you that I'm a habitual caller and I bug him, but that's not true because every time I've called him, it's because of a reason. And I said, that's fine. I'll meet you at 2 o'clock. And so I left it as that, and that's all I got. That's it. They never called me to tell me that the detective is not on the case anymore. They have not yet told me why it was moved to major crimes. I don't know.
Cobra, you're going to have to plug your mic in better.
I'll just take my headset off there. Can
that's
you hear me
better.
Now?
Yeah, there you go. I can hear you.
I'm going to make a very serious suggestion to you. First of all, you had the man on the phone. He could ask you any question that he could ask you on that phone. He wants to come and meet with you. I suggest that you have a lawyer, you saddle that lawyer up and have him at that meeting as well. And that just came to me very, very quickly, and I'm telling you right now, you better do that because that conversation, Peter, I don't know what you think about it, but that conversation sounded very weird to me. If that's all y'all did was beat the posies talking about he's got to talk to this guy, talk to that guy, but he's very interested in meeting you. He's probably got some handcuffs for you. I hope you didn't threaten him or anything, but have your lawyer there.
Oh, no. I've been very nice. I even asked him, I said, what was that the lead that Corey was working on? And he didn't know nothing about it. I said, okay, that's fine. Maybe that's why he needed to talk to Corey. But, no,
Have a lawyer there representing you at that time just to make sure that you don't step into something because, I mean, this case, Simon and I have spoken greatly about it. There's a lot of hocus-pocus going on behind the scenes, and it sounds to me that there's a lot of political moves going on here. So just, you know, for safety's sake.
I don't have a lawyer.
Well,
I've never needed one. No.
Well, hopefully there's somebody that can be there and represent you and watch out for your best interest.
I don't know why they, you know, I don't mind going in from out of town to go talk to them because I have other things going on. But he wants to meet me. I guess they're assigning more detectives on this case. And Corey told me he was going to be with me to the end, and I don't know what's going on. I haven't done anything personally or said anything to anybody. You know, not me personally, but other people have, and I've been warned, and I don't know. I'm just baffled. I don't know which way to turn anymore.
What have you been warned about?
Well, I need to tread softly.
What's the warning? Tread softly. Who told you this?
A couple people have said to tread. No, not law enforcement, no.
There's a number of things that have gone on where it's Christy, you need to just step away. Is that a fair estimate?
Yes, I'm away for now. I mean, I left town for a little while.
No. Is that what's being said to you? Simon's question was, is that what's being told to you? Step away.
Yeah, basically. I that's what I get, and maybe I'm too close to knowing the truth on things. I don't know.
Okay, Christy, where did they say they want to meet you at?
I'm going to their office. I'm going to the same office where Corey Crow is. It's in Slidell, Louisiana. Their office
is
stationed there.
Slidell.
Yes.
Okay.
It is.
That's what I wanted to find out, if they was going to bring you right there in the Pearl River area, or if they want Covington or Slidell.
It's Slidell. And, I mean, I'm willing to meet with them, and this is the captain. I've talked to the sheriff himself months and months ago on a conference call, you know, and they're assuring me they're doing everything they can. Well, they're not. I mean, in my book, I mean, maybe they're doing stuff behind the scenes, but they could at least let me know, you know, we're working on it, ma'am. We've done this. There's nothing. I mean, absolutely nothing. I'm trying to get another search up, but I haven't decided where it's going to be yet because I don't know if it's safe to go anywhere anymore. I've got a couple of calls in on other things, too, that it could be across state lines. So we shall see. I'll know more Monday. You know, if it is, I have a better chance on finding my son, put it that way. Not from St. Tammany Parish, you know, and maybe they'll tell me something Monday. And if I do get arrested, maybe I have to call somebody to come get me. I hope not. I never get in trouble day in my life.
If I could make a suggestion about that, if I could just follow up on Cobra's suggestion about a lawyer.
Yes.
If you cannot afford a lawyer, I don't believe you should go alone because we've had some shenanigans go on. But a hungry local politician, a selectman, any of the local representatives, if you're able to get one of them, convince one of them to come with you, they're always looking for some cause. They're always looking for something they can get their name recognized with, a topic. This may be that cause, and you might be able to cleverly use them, even as they use others, to protect you from any type of harassment from the police. So I think that the suggestion about the attorney is wise, but if you can't afford that, this is an alternative.
Actually, you know who I would recommend? Clay Harper. He's running for mayor
of Pearl River.
And he's hungry.
I don't know if they're going to let anybody in that room with me, actually. My ex-husband's going
to
go with me.
They have to let you allow
the representation. They have to let somebody into this meeting with me. Okay.
There would be no meeting then because it's your word against their word. No.
I don't even know. I guess
they have to allow you to have representation with you.
That's right.
Well, I mean, I don't even know what this is about. Maybe they're just introducing the new detectives to me. I don't know.
If they don't allow it, there's no meeting. He's right. It does not happen.
Right.
You don't go in the room.
You know.
You can't even bring a recorder of your own.
Right.
Nobody's even that's going to get you in trouble. So.
Well, my husband told me, he goes, why do they want to meet you in person? Why can't you talk on the phone like you have been? I said, I don't know. I don't know why they want to meet me.
It bothers me.
Yeah.
Yeah, it bothers my husband too. And he's got to work, so I'm bringing my ex-husband with me, and you know, and hopefully maybe one other person.
Don't do it. Be careful. So listen to what we're telling you. Make sure you protect yourself, lady.
I appreciate the advice, guys. I really do. And maybe I'll have more on this case, and something will happen next week. I hope. I hope it breaks. I really do. I know that my son has met foul play. I know that. I mean, just being a mother. And I know. And
Denny, would you have any words of advice?
Well, I think Culver and Peter pretty much hit him. I definitely would take somebody with me, and if they don't allow other people in the room,
right,
I would thank them and say, "Well, I guess we'll pass, and you don't forget about
right
it until you can have someone with you." And yeah, I don't know. This sounds a little odd to me. I don't, something doesn't quite ring right with it.
And I wanted to tell you, Denny, that I did leave messages with Corey. I guess I don't know if he was off the case then or not. That y'all had wanted to talk to him. You know, you would be calling his number. You know,
mm-hmm.
I never got a call back. I never could get a hold of anybody. And I said, okay. So, I mean, I've never talked to him. It's been over 5 weeks now. And, you know, I think the common courtesy is to say, well, he's not working on the case anymore. That would have been nice, you know.
Well, you
yeah,
had a right to know.
Certainly did. Yeah, you're right.
And it's funny, as they picked up these two messages, the captain did, they knew the messages right away. It was within an hour when I called the main office, you know, the sheriff's office, the main office, and they knew right away. I said, oh, you must have got the messages, because he said my ears must have been burning. And I said, oh, you listened to the messages. He said, yes. I said, boy, that went fast. You know, I mean, that's...
Well, you know, I don't know. I don't know, maybe Culver or Peter or anybody would have a different idea, but the detectives that I know today that are still on the job, most of them, I don't believe, would allow their messages to go unchecked for a very long period of time. And these people are people who have multiple cases. They're working. They're waiting for information.
Right.
And for any police officer, detective who's working active cases, to let their messages build up without checking them for possible important information, I think, you know, would not be very very advisable. So I suspect that they've received all your messages. I can't believe that they've, you know, just for some reason didn't check their answering machines when you've left previous messages.
Right.
I think
they
got them okay.
They checked them all, Denny, and here's the thing. They said something. Here's the reason I told her to take somebody. She called an hour later, if you heard what she said. After she left those messages, she was still fuming. Basically, she's frustrated. That's the true word. She's frustrated. She's reaching out for help. She calls up the sheriff, and they go, oh, your ears must have been ringing. Well, my phone should have been ringing. You guys are sitting around up there talking shit about me. You should have been on the damn phone calling me because you listened to the message, and y'all sitting around there drinking tea and having a good time at my expense. Now, what the hell's going on, and what can't we talk about on the phone, and why do I need to come see you? I'm coming to see you, all right, but I ain't going to be happy.
I'm going to be very polite, and if they just say the same thing over and over, I'm just going to say thank you for your time, and I'm walking out, and I don't need them.
If you go
them.
There
they
by yourself, message. You was forewarned. Don't go there by yourself, and if they don't allow anybody else in the room, then the meeting stops. That's it, end of discussion, because you're not doing anything anyway. They could ask you a series of questions while they had you on the phone, and they're sitting around talking about you. They should have been on the phone talking to you and not waiting that hour or whatever. So they had plenty of time to do that. So me, I'm very suspicious when I hear things like that happen. Period.
Y'all find out when I next Sunday or maybe before then. But I hope it's a good meeting.
If they give you a hard time, tell them next meeting you're bringing Cobra with you.
Oh, hell no. They sound like to me it sounds like they got handcuffs just waiting to put them on somebody. You know?
Well, I tell you what, if they handcuff me.
I don't know that you should even go to this meeting. You know, none of us are attorneys, but I'm just so uncomfortable that they do have something there's got to be a reason why they can't do this over the phone, and I don't like it.
I don't think
you should go.
Well, if they put me in jail or whatever, I'm gonna tell you. I'm hoping y'all, if you can make sure, if y'all find out I'm in jail, y'all just make sure the media knows what's going on, please, because I've never been in trouble a day in my life. I've never been in trouble, and I'm just amazed. And
you're tweaking some noses though.
You're tweaking some noses.
They don't always like that. And if you don't have representation, they may try to intimidate you like that. And I'll tell you what, I think one phone call just saying, confirming the meeting and find out, and why again? Can't we do this on the phone? Can you explain that to me? I need to give the information to my attorney and just see what they say.
Okay. Right. I think I will do that before I drive down there. Because, I mean, it's over almost a 3-hour drive. You know, I don't mind going if it's worth it. But, I mean,
right.
I'm not going to waste my time because if I don't like what they're saying, I was just going to walk out. And I told my cousin.
They've been fired already anyway, so.
Right.
Maybe they're wanting their job back.
Do you have a printer on your computer?
Who, me?
Yeah.
No. No, I don't even know how to scan anything. I usually get everybody else to do it for me.
Well, no, I mean, you should print up a couple of pink slips.
Pink slips? Oh, to fire them? I don't know if, I know you probably really can't fire anybody. I did it. I didn't actually fire them. I just told them I didn't need their services anymore. I mean, I don't know if I can do that, but they haven't helped me anyway, so why should I even be bothered with them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what I feel like. Maybe I'm
Christy,
wrong.
Christy, I do hope that you will call us immediately after the meeting.
I'll have somebody call us at least.
Yep.
We'll
do our best to arrange bail.
I appreciate it, guys. You know, I mean, this is all about trying to find my son, and that's all I want. I don't care about anybody else or later on I'll find out, and I just want to find him. And they can't understand that. If it was one of their children, maybe they'd feel the same way, you know?
Yeah.
That's all I want. That's it.
Oh, okay. I hate to do this to you, but...
That's okay. I know.
We got to move
right.
on.
You got other shows.
Guys,
it's torn down.
Please stay in touch with us.
I will. I will talk to y'all later. And it was nice chatting with everybody. And y'all have a good day, okay?
Okay.
Good luck, Christy.
Okay?
All right. Y'all take care. Thanks a lot. Okay?
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Unless I'm very much mistaken, we have the long-lost T.J. Hart with us.
Hello, Simon and panel. How are you?
Hello, T.J.
Hi, T.J.
Good morning. He's found a working battery for his cell phone.
It's harder than you think some days.
Okay. T.J., I know that you're really busy, so let's move on to the Haley Cummings case. What's the story? Tommy scores 15, 10, and 50?
You got it. 15's the magic number. As you and I were speaking earlier this week prior to the sentencing, I was thinking that, you know, possibly 3, but that was going on, you know, thinking that perhaps he had given them some kind of something to work on, not only in the drug case, but also in the Haley case. But that was made abundantly clear. He did neither, according to Judge LaRue in the case, and also along with the assistant state attorney, Jason Lewis. Basically, they said Tommy is what he is you know, a drug dealer, plain and simple, and that the information that he gave law enforcement was really a whole bunch of nothing at this stage of the game. At least that's what they're saying in court and saying to the press as well. We remember those times that we saw Tommy and then again Misty at the dock at Shell Harbor when the divers were bringing out all kinds of items, bones of a dead Indian, toenails from an alligator, and a few other things. But those wound up to be nothing related to Haley, who's been missing now for, what, almost 18 months since February of 2009? Mm-hmm. So, and then we have Flora Hollers, who goes back on TV. I understand she wasn't feeling too well, but she was back on TV with Jane Velez Mitchell on Headline News Friday,
And, you know, she was feeling, you know, pretty bad for Tommy, but still maintained that's what he said and that's what he told her and that's what she told police to go check at that dock. So there are a couple of things at play here, and I'm going to probably lean on Mr. Hyatt here when you start talking about some of the things that were said in court. They were saying things that he grew up in the drug environment, and they tried to make a little bit of a case for that, and his dad said, well, we thought the best of him. We thought that he would make it. Of course, that could just be words for all we know. Werder said Tommy's problem is that he's addicted to pills. If it wasn't for the trafficking charge, he'd be in drug court today. But the state argued that Tommy deserved the maximum of 30 years in prison, so the judge pretty much cut it in the middle there. You know, Lewis said that Tommy's not only a danger to his family, but also the community at large, because he was dealing with some pretty high-power stuff there with oxycodone and hydrocodone. Let's see, I'm trying to find some of my notes here.
Well, let me ask Peter.
Peter,
what's your thoughts on the 15 years?
I think, and again, this is completely something that is not likely to be proven, but I think there was an anger on the part of prosecution that Tommy gave them some solid information, and then he lied. He gave some information, then he retracted, and I think there was an anger that's behind this that not only that influenced the sentence. I can't say de facto that the judge handed down the sentence because of it, but I think that we would be naive to think that most people get sentences of 2 to 3 years for this sort of thing, and he got 15, and he's a young guy that's going to be 40, perhaps. Not only did he get a long sentence on him, but he also got 10 years probation and a $50,000 fine. Now, when you talk about the probation, that's almost guaranteeing him a trip back to the jail or the prison, because he's not a person that has been able to abide by laws. The family is constantly in trouble. So I think that there is an anger, there is a righteous anger that wants this little girl found and brought home, and Tommy has shown that he has clear knowledge of what happened to her. But he has been deceptive about where he's been, where he's not been, and where that body was. And there's anger.
So you know something, Peter, I would agree with you. And, in fact, one of the police officers, Travis Smith, said the whole meat and potatoes on the Haley Cummings investigation is what happened that night. And according to Smith, this is a direct quote, we have yet to have heard what truthfully happened with Misty, with Tommy. Every time we interview them, it's a different story. We don't know what the true story is because we can't tell who's lying.
Yeah.
And that would be anger.
Within the lies, I think that we have a snapshot picture, and I think we all have somewhat summarized it into what we think have happened. But I do think we have, within those lies, indications. I do think that there was drugs involved. I do think there was probably an accidental overdose trying to quiet her down. And I do certainly believe that her body was weighted down with cinder blocks and thrown into the water. I'm sorry to Jan to hear that, but that's what I think happened based on the language that these people use, even in their lies.
Oh, okay, TJ, the other thing is, it isn't next week. The phraseology, drop dead date for Misty to plea out.
And it would be on Friday the 13th.
Ooh, what a great
Whoa.
Day.
Whoa.
Yes, it is. And then we've got the trial in St. John's County on the 23rd if she does not decide to cop a plea. And then Ronald's got another appearance in court. Hopefully, this is his attorney speaking, Terry Shoemaker, hopefully to get it down to, 15 years or something like that. And that will be on the 20th. So no one is showing their hand yet on if there's a plea deal been struck, if there's any kind of a deal whatsoever, or if it's been refused. So I guess we're going to find out on the 20th. So the 13th, the 20th, and the 23rd are the dates in August is going to be having some things to go on here. Also, a bit of a reminder that there is going to be a vigil. I think there's one tonight, and then there's also one on the 17th, which is Haley's birthday at 2:17 in the afternoon. That's down there by the bridge near the city park in Palatka. right by the St. John's River, very beautiful area, that'll be a balloon release there.
I was somewhat surprised to read a news release. I think last week or maybe the week before, that the reward money had been up to $30,000. The thing that really surprised me was where the money came from. A very large proportion of it came from donations from the Palenque area.
Wow, they want this over. They want a resolution.
Yeah, well, I can't blame them.
Yeah, I think it was something like $21,000. Local residents.
Yeah.
It does make you wonder. Mr. C, do you think that we're ever going to get a resolution to this case?
I think, I'll tell you. God. Well, you know, it's like Peter said. He said he thought it was drugs. I know for a fact it's drugs. I mean, you know, hopefully someday they'll all clean up and clear out and tell the real deal. And hopefully there will be. I mean, basically, always the cream always comes to the surface. You know, it always, the shit always floats, so to speak. I mean, it will come out. I think it already came out. It's just, it would sound very crazy to have this at trial with all the he says and she says. But it's like Peter said, the truth is in the middle of all those lies, and I think they have a pretty good snapshot of it. However, to get it before a jury, and, you know, of course, it's a heavy publicized case, and that would very much have every reporter in the country, they don't want to second-think anything. So they're frustrated. I mean, you know, we're all frustrated. Do I think it's going to have a resolve to it? I think eventually it will be resolved. There's been some changing of hands here and there and some, you know, some deals. And once, you know, these people, like, I'm waiting for the Friday the 13th. I mean, after everybody is, you know, got their mark cut out for how long they're going to be in prison, you know, now Tommy, now you got to remember now, Tommy was with me for 4 freaking days out showing me every place that Joe Overstreet went. Then he comes up with this story and tells Granny. Granny tells police, and they're all back down there again, and then that changes. And he was at the trailer supposedly at 10 o'clock at night knocking. He was over there at 6 o'clock supposedly smoking a J. And you take all these stories and put them together, now he's got 15, and like Peter said, he's got 10-year probation on that. That's a 25-year sentence. I don't care how you slice it. And the $50,000 payment restitution. And, you know, I joked with you earlier in the week. I said, are you going to give him a loan? Because these people ain't no $50,000. What the hell? So, some, you know, he's going to – they're screwed. And the only possible way for anybody out at this stage of the game is just go ahead and break free and say what it is and, you know, save your own ass at this stage of the game. And I think maybe that's what they're waiting on. And the only thing with Peter, I'd say, yeah, they're frustrated. If I'd have been the judge up in there, 100 years would have not been enough, especially after I've rode with the guy and he flat lied to me and then he's telling lies to law enforcement. I can only imagine their frustration in the case. So I think eventually the cream will come to the top. There will be resolution. I was hopeful that it would happen long before now, but eventually it will. Eventually it always does.
Okay. Jam has a question.
Just a simple question to Cobra. Someone in the chat room wants to know, is Johnny Sheffield retired from the PCSO?
I don't know that he was retired from there. I believe what happened, you know, Johnny was disabled, I guess, from the United States Marine Corps as being Section 8, Signal 20, as we call it in law enforcement, Section 8. I mean, he's proven to be not all there. So I think he took early out because he wasn't all there. I mean, you wouldn't want this guy with a gun, you know, showing up at your house on a domestic issue. He might just settle it right there. You know, I don't know.
They want to know how long ago, you know, when did this happen? When did he?
I really couldn't tell you. I know it was prior to the disappearance of Haley that he wasn't there, and I'm thinking it was years back. I'm assuming at least 5 or better years. I would, because he was working as a jailer with Peggy Cohn at one point in time. That did come out in the investigation. He was working as a jailer, working in the control department up there. But he had been in several scrubs and light run-ins with the law enforcement since then. So I don't think that he actually retired. I think that Maybe he did, you know.
Was he actually working for PCSO, or was he working for the corrections department?
Well, as my understanding, he was PCSO, Putnam County Sheriff's Office, was his destination as far as I know.
Okay. Thank you.
Dave, I know that you follow the Haley story a little bit. What do you make about this week's development?
Can you hear me all right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Well, I don't know. I mean, this week I've been trying to follow the Anthony case a little bit more, but all I know is they're all going to be in jail. That's what it looks like to me, and I don't know if they're ever going to find out what happened to little Haley. You know, if she was thrown in the river, which seems to be the general thinking, then I doubt if anyone will ever find her.
Ye of little faith.
Yeah, that's me.
Dowdy Thomas. I thought your name was Dave. Dave Thomas. Kenneth Williams, man.
It's unfortunate, but that probably is a very true statement. I'm, you know, finding a young, you know, skeletonized body when there's water everywhere. It is a tough road to hoe. I do want to move on to the Casey Anthony story, but before I do, I'm going to feed a bone to all of our listeners, and I'm going to do it at Mr. C's expense. Mr. C, you and I have shared some interesting information this week. In your opinion, does Atlanta, Georgia have some busy streets?
Yes, the problem is whether those busy streets are named Harris or named Martin. But the truth teller may be able to straighten that all out for us.
I don't want to get into it in today's program, but for you listeners, yeah, do some digging, do some thinking. There's some enormous things.
I'll give you a little clue, so you got to help them out a little bit better than that. I would say start Google searching Texas and TMZ, ABC News, Art Harris, Nicole Smith. Start
Google
searching
Nicole Smith.
Anna Nicole Smith. Google search that. Also the Howard Stern guy. And you may find that a certain journalist may have, and I'm using words like may because I want you to do your own homework, you may find that he likes to proliferate stories, to boost stories and boost readership by losing tape, by wiping hard drives clean on computers, by losing computers, by flat lying to law enforcement, by hiding behind Fifth Amendment issues. And I would say the streets are going to get very, extremely busy. And that's about all the clues I could give you, and you'll have to go and search those out and then find out what baldness, what truths, actually, that you serve to be truth or fact, truth or fiction. So I think you need to do some research out there, everybody that's blogging and doing some things, and you may find you've been on the wrong side for quite some time.
Oh, I've got to admit, the documents I read this week were quite illuminating.
Oh, I got more for you, my man. I got more documents that'll make you, what were you referred to as, mophead? I'll have the shit braided by the time you finish reading these documents. they'll call you Jamaican Mind. How you like
okay.
Him with braids, Dan?
All right. Enough of bashing on Emmy winners.
Yes, and that's a bunch of bullshit, too.
All right. Let's move on to the other Florida case. Dave, you're the point man. What is going on with the Kaylee Anthony case?
Well, what isn't going on? You know, there's There's Cindy.
Can you turn the volume down just a little bit?
Yeah, I'm on a microphone now too, a regular microphone. Let me try this. Is that better?
No.
No. Is that better?
Sure.
I'll just move away from it. It should be okay now.
Mm-hmm. Put it out in the truck, damn it.
What's that?
No, if you can take that microphone off, because you're ringing my headsets over here, brother.
Oh, really? This is a regular, professional microphone. All right, let me try this. I'll go back to this.
Busy street.
Okay, now back to telephone. Is that better?
No, you're breaking up, but let's go with it anyway. So what happened this week?
Well, there's a thing that I really want to dig into is are the 8 motions that Judge Perry turned down, that Andrea Lyon filed most of them last year and one this year, trying to state that the death penalty was unconstitutional. But of course, the judge cited case law, and that's something that was made abundantly clear in his rulings, that this defense did not cite case law, and it seems to be the ongoing theme for Lyon, which she was, Cheney Mason, certainly Jose Baez. They just plead their case, but they don't cite anything, to back it up. So, I think that as long as they keep filing motions with no case law, they're just going to keep losing. That's one thing. That's something that really I want to talk about at some point or write about. But I guess, all this paperwork, the documents that were released, I mean, my goodness, it's like it makes Dominic Casey look like a real conspiracy nut. And he's talking to psychotic psychics, and they're making up all kinds of stuff. Okay, let's run with that. That sounds good. It's like they just wrote their own fictional account of what transpired here. And, of course, none of it is true. So, I don't know. It was just a weird week. I don't know what I can add to it, unless we go on and really discuss it, from here on out. But I love talking about it, but I don't want to take up the floor.
Jen, you read a number of the letters that came out of the document dump. I mean, basically. I was actually typing and watching the TV and just half listening to you, but as I recall, it was, you're not going to believe this. I've just read, 8 gazillion pages, and, I only heard Kaylee's name mentioned twice.
It was actually only 3 letters that I was reading at that time, but... Yeah, she goes on and on and on about how Casey is and how much she wishes Casey would let her spend some time with her. I mean, she just goes on and on. And there's only one time that I can remember that she actually spoke of Kaylee, and that was in the process. It was something about I'm looking for the letters, and I can't find them now. But something about that just the 3 of them were best friends or something to that fact, that they would be together forever or something like that. But it was nothing like, we know you're innocent, so we're going to find who did this to Kaylee. Oh. And it was never nothing like, we need to find who the real person is that did this. I mean, if it was me, that's what I would be writing to her and explain, we're still behind you because we know that you're innocent. We're still behind you, and we are going to find who did this. But there was nothing like that at all. And it was just about her and Casey talking about how they were best friends, and she was the only one that could be Casey's best friend. And she just goes on and on, and it was really kind of sick.
I got a monkey wrench for you. Okay.
You know, I have some very serious sources around this planet we call Earth, and it has been rumored, and the rumor came from a very strong source or sources. And my understanding is this, and the monkey wrench is this, if Baez was to throw in the towel, it has been rumored that he desires to throw in the towel. He wishes he had thrown in the towel. However, he cannot throw in the towel because one of his deals coming down the road with Telemundo Radio is he has to see this case to its bitter completion in order to take over Telemundo as their, I guess, Geraldo of, you know, whatever station he has, a Fox. So Telemundo has an offer out there on the table. Now, Dave, you may know something about that offer that's on the table.
Yeah, I can say a couple of things about that. Okay. One is that he was basically the court said that you've got to stay on this case since you agreed to do it pro bono. They said to him, you know, you can't leave. You're in for the duration. That's one. And number two, before that ruling basically came down, someone told me, I'm not going to mention any names, that came from a really super reliable source, and I'll mention that name. It was direct from Cheney Mason, that he said that Jose Baez will live in a tent. You know, he's never going to leave this case, you know, so he's not going to make any money from it, but he's so focused on this case that he'll live in a tent if he has to.
Well, that sounds like hoopla to me. I'm talking about the reason that he wanted to pull off the case, and there's been some discussion at the roundtable to do that. However, Telemundo is not backing up from what they said originally to stay on this case to its end, and then we have our new anchor, which is Baez, is our anchor on Telemundo.
Well, that could be. So that would be three different things that would you know, coerce him to stay.
I think that's the main one right there. Shit.
I don't think he has any options.
No, he doesn't.
I'm not happy about it.
Well, he could still throw the towel any which way, whether he has to stay on the case being pro bono or not. There's many, many excuses that he could come up with justifiably to back off the case. However, I believe my source is correct in stating that he wants that Telemundo gig because what is life after this case for him? I mean, basically, Dave, you said it a while ago, he doesn't cite case law. He goes in and throws all this crap on the wall to see what will stick, yet nothing bases back to case law. And I'm not an attorney, but I've been around the judicial system a time or two to know that if you're going to bring something, you're going to bring case law to match it, to say, hey, this was done here, this was done there, and we're saying this is not constitutional because this, not because we have a feeling or a thought process. I mean, this is a check and balance system that something has to already, unless you're trying to make law, you have to have something to point to. And, you know, in a lot of these cases that amended complaints or whatever you call them that they brought, there is case law for them, and I'm wondering why somebody didn't go to the law library if you don't have the damn books yourself and put the case law in there and say, Judge, I'm sorry, but here's what it says. This is what happened prior in so-and-so v. so-and-so. But none of that. You don't see any of that.
Peter, I want to bring you into the discussion. Have you had an opportunity at all to look at the letters that were released?
I have. It's a great deal of information there, and the things that have been released are rich with insight into the defense, into the thinking of the family, into the thinking of Baez. The emails with involving Dominic Casey themselves are fascinating. So I just finished, believe it or not, only page one of one of Cindy's letters, and I published that this morning for analysis, and I'm still on vacation, so I'll be doing more this week. But, Simon, it is rich with insight.
Oh, yeah, they're interesting.
When you get a chance, Peter, I would sure like you to bust through some of those Dominic Casey issues because, one, his time in service here in the United States, being an investigator. Something was said last week about the foreclosures and this, that, and the other. And then the only reason that I have a crow to pick there because he entwined himself into the Haley case, with the soothsayers and people not related that they lived on a street that had the same name as so-and-so, and therefore they knew everything about the case, and his involvement to law enforcement with me. So I started checking on a few things, and I said, oh, wait a minute. This is the investigator that came in for the side. Now, all of a sudden, if everybody is, I could see this case getting thrown for the simple reason that, you know, this one's dealing with soothsayers. This one's not doing case law. I mean, does this girl have proper representation facing a potential death sentence? I mean, my God.
What amazed me was the personalities. Whenever we write, and this is for all of us, whenever we write, we reveal ourselves, and a profile of who we are can be drawn up from our writings. And I have been stunned to see, and now I understand why Dominic Casey has lasted so long, that Dominic Casey has a very similar personality to both Cindy and Casey, that they all have just an incredible low ethic level that they can sing to in terms of casting blame. Like, Jan, you said that you were angered or surprised that that Kaylee's name wasn't mentioned much. But if you think back to the jailhouse videotapes, if you were there, and in analysis we do this, we ask you to place yourself there. If you were in jail and you were reporting that your child was kidnapped and held for someone, that would probably be about the only thing you can talk about. You couldn't eat, you couldn't sleep, you couldn't talk about anything except where that child may be, what's happening to that child right now. Cindy doesn't believe that Kaylee is alive, and Cindy is not in some kind of bizarre denial. Cindy is a, just like Dominic Casey and just like Casey, Anthony, Cindy is a clever, manipulating liar. She holds the world in contempt. Everyone is stupid except for her. She knows these things are going to be read, and I know Dave and I disagree about this, but I think that she has herself tweaked the nose of an inspector, a low-level guy, just a base-level guy for the post office who investigates fraud, and she has gone too far. I think she's going to get investigated.
Oh, I think she'll be that.
Sorry.
You know, for sure, I think that Cindy's going to be investigated. No, she is being investigated.
No, I mean, for mail fraud in particular, I think that there's other issues that she's facing, including perjury, and she's going to be facing some obstruction charges and other charges. I don't know the legal world there, but she has obviously tampered with this case.
The only thing I know is the jail said that they weren't going to investigate that any further, you know, with that letter.
That's not their domain. That is the post office's domain. And they have guys, Dave, just kind of like regular guys who do local investigations, and this is not something that is going to be ignored. I mean, people that buy prescription drugs over the mail, for instance, or steroids or other things like that, when they get investigated, it's not just the DEA, it's the post office as well. And their investigators are well-trained guys, and they get into these things. And this fraud that she perpetrated is going to be caught. I really think so. I think that the post office is going to take this very seriously. They don't like the...
Well, it depends. It depends. Like, there's nothing against the law mailing phony addresses, you know, as far as, like, somebody can make up the Department of Constipation and mail it to a friend as a joke. And you know, the post office is not going to come after you for that. You know, they handle that kind of mail all the time, and they don't care about it. But if she's using Baez's address, you know, and then Baez sits there and files a complaint with the post office, I mean, I don't know if the post office on its own would surreptitiously go right in there and start investigating and ask for charges to be pressed.
Okay, but the story I heard was the letter was marked legal material.
Mail. Legal mail, do not open.
Right.
Right.
Now,
yeah.
That's a different kettle
of fish.
That is. Yeah.
That was deliberately snuck in that way. They did that on purpose.
You know, regardless.
What I wonder is who investigates the business that she's been doing on the internet? Isn't that the FBI, Peter, that does that? Because there are volumes of that, of getting these tweakers and these bloggers and everybody else fired up and telling all these different stories, and you know, and also some of the writings ended up getting my good friend Richard on the front page of the Daggum National Enquirer. I mean, they know that these things were purported
wrong, and they use the mail and the internet and everything else to do it. Seems to me that when I heard they weren't investigating, maybe the jail is not investigating, but I'll guarantee you somebody's investigating something.
You may not believe this, not you, Cobra, but just you in general, that a personality goes a long way to find out whether someone's going to be investigated or not. And Cindy has a personality that aggravates others. It irritates others. And as she flaunts these things, there is someone sitting there, and he's making, you know, I don't know, 40 grand a year someplace, and his job is in that particular area to investigate any type of tampering with the mail. And he does not like her attitude and the way she conducts herself, and he says to himself, I'm going to investigate this. He gets clearance from a supervisor, and off he goes. And then the when it crosses state lines, and that's the reference with the federal, with the internet, it becomes escalated. And I think that Cindy has aggravated and pushed enough people. Jose Baez, one of the most foolish things that he did from the beginning was to aggravate and insult law enforcement, taunt them, make an enemy of them in a form of being machismo. They have made so many mistakes from the beginning. But now we're reading that Cindy has gone so far, and Dom Casey as well. Is Cindy even willing to implicate her own brother in the death or disappearance, not the death at this point, but the disappearance of Kaylee Anthony? Has anyone seen that?
Her brother or her son?
No, her brother. I'm sorry, Cindy's own brother. Rick?
I forgot his name.
Rick Plessia, is it?
I don't remember.
Oh, Plessia. Rick Plessia, is
yes.
Cindy's brother.
That's correct. That she,
yeah, but he lives in, like, North or South Carolina or something.
Yeah, no, it doesn't have to make any difference at all, but this apparently was discussed among them that they were willing to implicate Keo Marie. I'm analyzing that one now. Keo Marie was a high school friend who they believed had been very jealous of Casey for a long time, and she's obviously the one that kidnapped Kaylee.
There's more to that, by the way. There's a lot more to that. Just before Casey made the news, there was a murder in Orlando, a jogger near J. Blanchard Park. Well, on the other side of Dean Road, by the name of Nicole Ganguza. And that's the one, remember when Padilla and his team of divers went there and Cindy made some kind of a reference to a cross that was put up?
Yes.
You know, on a tree? Well, it was all tied into this Nicole Ganguza, but at the same time, Nicole Ganguza was on the other side of Dean Road, where she was jogging and where she was, they found her body behind the post office near there on Colonial Drive. But that ties into this whole Keo Marie thing, that this Nicole Ganguza was placed in Casey's trunk. That's where the smell came, and Kaylee is really off somewhere from Colombia to Venezuela to wherever she is today.
Right. Well, let me.
I don't know if you've heard about all that.
I've heard all those stories.
One of the references in the email. Yep. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Ahead.
So
one of the biggest things that Cindy Anthony is going to have to overcome, and everything that she's put out there about everyone else trying to implicate everyone else. What she's going to need to do, this is just me saying this as an investigator behind the scenes, she's going to need to come up with her own legal strategy for the simple reason her own son, Lee, is going to put the mark on Cindy. There's no love lost there, number one. Number two, he made a speech during the funeral deal, and he's talking directly to Casey. And I'm not going to, reveal this secret to you. I will never forget my promise. And I think that his promise was, I'm not going to let you go down for this, sis. I'm going to implicate my own mother in this, because who released the story early on that the mother and her had a choking match going on where Cindy Anthony turned into some kind of demon-looking woman and grabbed her and choked the living shit out of her. And then that story was leaked out. Who leaked that story, number one? Number two, I think that she's got a real bad situation coming because Lee is going to point the finger right at Cindy. And watch and see.
Okay, I do want to break in. I want to bring the very quiet Denny Griffin on the line.
Yeah, Yes.
You've been listening.
Calling
I mean,
Denny.
Write the damn book. That's what the problem is.
You've got to learn how to shout out. I mean, this is... this is like war games.
You know, I was
legal pad. He's got a legal pad there in front of him. Maybe
got the legal pad. Back. Got the legal pad going to beat hell, filling it right up.
I know.
I was want to go back if I could to the thing about Cindy possibly facing some problems by the time all the dust settles here. I'm just wondering. I'd like to get the opinion. My personal feeling is that they should definitely go after her. Hopefully they're going to. But I'm just wondering if the DA's office will look at this from a public relations standpoint and say, well, if we go after her, you know, for the perjury or whatever they have on her, and we got a conviction, if we get a conviction against Casey, it might look like piling on. If we lose, if Casey's acquitted, it'll look like sour grapes, and we're trying to take somebody down. Is there any chance you think? I don't know this prosecution team that's in place, but
they're a class act.
Are they? They'll do the right thing regardless of.
Yeah.
Finest in the nation, my friend. Yep, Denny, you don't have to worry about that. They will go get them all, pile on or no pile on, they'll get them.
Well, that's good. I certainly hope that comes down. And yeah, you know. Talk about a bunch of snakes. I mean, you got all these little, you know, talking about, will Lee give up Cindy, you know, and implicate her and so on, and who's going to sell who out. It almost reminds me of some of the stuff we've talked about with the Cummings case. I mean, you got all these people and different personalities, and man, I mean, it's like kind of a cesspool.
Denny, don't you think it would be kind of like dumb for anybody to go after Cindy for the murder or anything? I mean, after all, Casey said that it was a nanny who took her daughter, so she's not even implicating her own mother, straight from the arrested person's the only suspect's mouth.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think that really there's any chance? I mean, I know going back to that Nicole Ganguza thing that they thought that, you know, they were going to start this story about her being in the trunk of Casey's car. But the problem is, I mean, she was found, her body was found before Casey or Kaylee died, 3 days before. So,
yeah.
You know, there's no way that you can stretch that story to make any truth out of it. You know, it's the same thing here. There's no way to stretch the truth to implicate Cindy in her granddaughter's death. Don't you think?
I don't say they're going to try to implicate her directly in Kaylee's death, but I think it might be part of the defense strategy, which would include
Absolutely.
Possibly Lee wanting to help Sis out, as Cobra said, to paint Cindy as the villain in the whole thing, that her action is the choking match, if that happens.
Maybe in the penalty phase.
Well, whatever, but I'm saying it wouldn't surprise me if all these people would, or some of them would, turn on each other, because it seems to me there's not a whole lot of loyalty back and forth here. There's some different agendas by the family members, and I wouldn't put anything past any of them. Nothing would surprise me.
But Casey's not even pleading guilty or anything. I mean, she's saying she's innocent. She says she didn't do it.
Okay.
Yeah, well,
Denny, while I have your attention,
yes.
I want to run something by you.
Sure.
It hit me sideways earlier this week. I had a discussion with someone that I absolutely trust. Right? Baez's PI has been sniffing around. And there seems to be two areas of interest. Apparently, Mark Najame is shopping a book deal. And they're also looking for the sights and smells while searches were conducted. And this information, so I'm being told, is to support an upcoming defense motion. What do you make of that?
To support an upcoming what, Simon?
A defense motion. But I have no clue what the defense motion could be.
No, this is the first I've heard of this. They want to know the sights and smells during the search and about Najim's potential book. Unless it was something about when Najim was involved, something about his motivation. I don't know. That kind of is a blindsider here. I'm not sure what the hell they get up their sleeve.
Yeah. No, it amazed me. Okay, we're almost out of time. Peter, I do want to ask you about Rosie Franco.
That was a fascinating thing. I had seen, I didn't know who she was at first, but I had seen the transcripts of her interview, and it caught my attention was she described someone as being a natural blonde. I said, what does the waitress look like? And she described as being a natural blonde, and that was an immediate red flag to me that that's not a normal response from someone. So I did just a brief analysis of her interview with police. And the analysis shows deception. And the deception was clear and it was evident. And I published it. And then someone had written to me saying, or left a comment on the blog saying that Rosie was on another radio show, upset about it, that actually when I went and listened to it, the recording of it, and she's actually using deceptive language, passive language, even in her defense. But what she did was she said that that I never called her to ask her what she was doing, and I'm not sure why I would call. I just found a statement, and I did the analysis of it. I learned later that if someone doesn't know what happened, she said that she was in a restaurant where Mallory worked, and the waitress came over and began to talk about things about the Casey Anthony case, and she went to the police with the information, which she was being praised for doing. However, my analysis shows that it was a setup, that she went snooping around, like a reporter should, and looking for information. They spoke to her boyfriend, who was supposed to be there, and he contradicted her, and then the waitress denied the whole thing. So apparently Rosie was upset, and she talked about it on the radio, but one thing she didn't do was she didn't defend anything. She didn't say this was wrong or that was wrong. Just kind of like one of those blanket, he's lying about me, I don't know who he is. Kind of fascinating.
Okay, we are completely out of time. It is time to go around the round the panel and get beaten senseless. Cobra, let's start with you. What are your parting words for us?
Oh, hell, stay tuned to next week for the rest of the drama. As the stomach churns.
Do you think we might have some more busy streets tomorrow? Or next week?
I think busy streets is busy working on financial disclosures and stuff like that. So we'll probably get a slight break in that case. I think some real heads will turn this week, and people will be stepping and fetching, and they'll just have to realize, don't say you don't have something when you do.
Simon, can I ask Cobra a question before we close this out?
Of course.
I had a question from the chat room, and I didn't get a chance to ask it with everything that was going on, but they want to know if you know, if you think that Dominic Casey will wind up losing his license after all this.
I tell you what, the way they've been after me for simple stuff and, you know, argumentatively proven beyond a shadow of a doubt in a positive form, I would say that the state would be remiss not looking at him, looking at some of his disclosures and some of the things that he's done in both cases and some behind-the-scenes stuff. I would be more concerned if I was Dominic Casey to be spending a stint in jail over some of these fallacies that have been created and, you know, this creative making up of reasonable doubt and different things. Losing a license is one thing. Going to jail is, woohoo, something totally else. I think that this prosecuting agency down in Orlando is the finest and probably with the finest of the state. And I think that there's going to be a lot of folks. Right now we're focusing on Casey, but I think there's going to be a lot of folks end up with serious fines, serious stuff, and jail time. I think there's going to be a lot more than just what we've touched on here briefly.
Okay, and they also want to know if you know if you knew Dominique before the Kaylee case.
No, I did not. In fact, I'm glad I never met the man, and I have talked to him on the phone. He alleged that I threatened him when I asked him to back off of my case, that he had no viable client in the case, that it was, you know, I caught him red-handed at making stuff up, and I courtesy called him as I would courtesy call anyone and said, sir, I respect the fact that you're an investigator, and I would like you to back off and stop perpetuating fake stories, and secondly, get a client that's truthful and not one that's got a street name for the last name. And that's how he muggled his way in. He basically pushed his way into the case on some false pretenses, and then we started finding out that, you know, he, one thing he doesn't know, but I'll say it right now, I hired his man, Hoover, to come and work for me briefly to give me information that I was looking for. So I know his inside game. I know what he did. And if I was him, I'd go back to England and practice over there for a while and get the hell out of here.
Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't mess with a cobra. You don't mess with a guy. Especially, I tried to give him the reach around. I tried to be nice to him. And, you know, I tried to correct his wrongdoing in a professional manner. And he pissed me off. So when somebody pissed me off, I put somebody inside your camp, and I'll find out what you did. And I found out what he did. And he, you know, he's shuffling and duffling right now, but the safest thing for him is to go back to England and start over again. Come over here messing around and see what you get.
And Cobra is a serious guy. I mean, he threatened
me. Oh,
I'm
very sure.
He threatened to come visit.
His damn door in, didn't I? I said, I'm going to kick your door in. And he told me to kick the next door neighbor's door in because wasn't nobody living there. All is
okay.
Fun. No. If you draw swords,
all right,
Cobra, be careful.
I do need to wrap this up. We're rapidly running out of time. Dave, your parting thoughts.
Well, I guess it would have to tie into the story about the allegation about marking the shame in a book and a motion by Baez. My guess would be that there's no love lost between Chaney Mason and Mark Najame. Okay, they've never been friends. So if there's something that could go on between them that could put a damper, or you know, or you know, blow a fuse in this case, that would be one thing. Secondly, I think that what they'll try and do is if Najame is possibly writing a book, whether that's true or what, they're going to play on that, and they're going to sit there and say that this shows that he had an ulterior motive, why he wouldn't let us come in and look at the TES files, you know. So I think that they can play on that sort of a thing.
If Najame was smart, he'd pick up Richard Grun as a client, and then he would kick everybody's ass. If Najame was a very smart man, he would do that.
No, Najame's a class act, no doubt about it.
He is, and if he brought in Richard Grun as his client, he would not only have the best-selling book, but he'd have all the pieces.
Okay.
Yeah. He would.
Really?
But, you know, he's still got that privilege, you know, between his clients. He can't just open his mouth freely. So
when somebody else can.
All right. Denny, I need your final thoughts.
Yeah, very quickly, I'm looking forward to the so-called drop-dead date for Misty and see what shakes out there. And by next week, we should have a little better idea of what, if anything, is happening in the realm of plea bargains and deals.
And Peter?
Strike one was Hope Sykes. Strike two was Tommy Croslin. And I think strike three might be Misty Croslin. There are two resolutions to the case. One is we know what happened to Haley. And two is being able to prove that. I think we're going to get number one. I don't know about number two, but I think we're going to get number one relatively soon.
All right.
I hope you're right, Peter.
And Jan.
Well, sorry, I still have to stick to my thoughts about Haley still being alive, but that's
Lord.
My opinion. But also, I just want to remind everybody to remember your prayers for Haley, for Zach, and for Eric. and pray that they are found soon, and also that Kaylee will finally get justice in her case, too.
Amen.
This is Simon Barrett for Logan News Network, and I want to really thank our illustrious panel, and I'm sure we'll be doing this again next week.
Oh, yeah.
And until then, goodbye.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you for being
here.
Bye-bye.